Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. I'm here to talk about being a robot. I don't know. I can't.
Being a robot.
Yeah. I mean, I've just been playing a lot of Mass Effect, and I'm a robot now.
I see.
So are all humans. They got the blue ending, is what happened. The blue ending is canon. It's been confirmed. Bye. I'm joking, of course, but
okay. Yeah. I was like, so do we just jump right in now?
No, I was just making a joke about things.
We have been playing some Mass Effect Andromeda. Mm-hmm. We have some loose ends to tie up with Horizon and Breath of the Wild. We have a super awesome topic this week that came to us from Jim, who is a longtime listener of the show. So we have a lot to talk about tonight, so we're going to dive right in, I think. We'll probably do our wrap-ups of Horizon and of Breath of the Wild before we jump into our Mass Effect talk, but I feel like there's probably a lot of people right now, we were talking a little bit about it in the pre-show, who are basically just busy playing games right now. We were kind of like, oh, you know, where's our, like, normal chat room people? And there's a couple of you in there. I see you, Night Vale. I see you, Spexes. Thanks for coming and hang out. But we were really, really surprised because, like, there's nobody here. And so it's totally got to be because there are so many different awesome games that are out right now. PS4, you've got Horizon. Nintendo, you've got Breath of the Wild. PC, you've got Mass Effect. What you doing, Xbox? Where's your exclusive? Not that Mass Effect is exclusive.
Oh, wait, Halo Wars 2.
Oh.
No. it is an exclusive, but it's not so hot. I mean,
Mass Effect is where we're playing. Mass Effect on the PC is what we're playing. So, I haven't seen much about any of the console versions and how they're kind of stacking up.
I've read that they're not so hot. Like, the performance on the Xbox One and the PS4 are subpar, and the Xbox One S actually runs Mass Effect Andromeda quite well. Now, there was this exclusive, like, PS4 Pro. They announced it on the PS4 Pro stream. So I'm wondering, I know Matt, a guest that was on the show a couple weeks ago, is playing on his PS4 Pro, and he was commenting on a couple of the issues and sharing choice screenshots that don't really show off the game in the best light. But there are, you know, it's a game that I think in the right situations looks amazing, no matter what console you're on. If we're just talking about which console, which platform looks the best. But I think this is one of those instances where if you have a beefy enough PC and this game requires a beefy PC, that's the platform to play it on. And I know Valerie's probably like a little upset by that statement because she had written into the show and I wanted to address it. We didn't actually respond to her, I don't think, but she's playing on PS4, which is one of those issues where we're not going to be able to get the band back together. Because of platform differences, and
makes me sad.
It's a bit of a bummer, but we were just talking about, you know, games having platforms having a good choice of games these days, and I mean, I think I have my PS4 game with Horizon. Like, that's gonna be in the hopper for a while in terms of I'm turning my PlayStation on to play this game, and I think if I were to play Mass Effect on PS4, I would be even less likely to go back to Horizon. I'm one of those weird people who, you know, has one game per platform, and that's what I'm playing. It's very hard to jump in between games. You'd think it'd be the opposite. It'd be very hard to jump between platforms. But for me, it's being able to jump between games on a specific platform. I just need to, if I'm playing it on the console, I want to finish it before I play something new. So that's the beauty of a loophole and playing on PC.
I can kind of see that issue. I mean, it's the Netflix problem, right? Like, you sit down in front of a device and then you're just like, well, what am I going to entertain myself with? Mm-hmm. And if you have way too many choices, then you're less likely than if you say, oh, I've been sitting at my PC all day. I'm going to go sit on the couch and do something. Then, you know, you have your separation of console versus PC and you can say like, okay, PC is my Mass Effect place and, you know, console is my Horizon place, and there's a good separation there. I can understand that. I can definitely see that. But yeah, so I think we should jump right into our very, very quick discussion of Horizon and of Breath of the Wild, because those, I think, are the ones that people are probably least interested in, because we've already talked a couple of them to death. But so very, very quickly, I just wanted to talk about Horizon a little bit more. I know I have been totally raving about this game for weeks now, and you guys are probably sick of me talking about it, but I just had to say, I got to the point in the quest where, I'm not going to tell you how the game tells you, but it's a very, like, in line with, like, it doesn't, there's no big pop-up that says, like, this is the final boss fight or anything. But you are notified that there, you can't go back from a specific point. So basically they say, you know, get everything done you want to get done. And I was like, ooh, man, I have not done everything I want to get done. And it's not so much that I was worried that I couldn't go back afterwards. It was like I didn't want to go back afterwards. Like, mm-hmm. once I find out what the end of the story is, it's the same idea as Breath of the Wild, really. Mm-hmm. It will basically reset you back to right before the end boss fight. But then I don't have as much interest in exploring the world, I guess, from like a story and a narrative. And I feel like with Aloy, I just, in Horizon, for some reason, her character is very richly developed. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I want more time with her and I want to allow her to do more things. And I'm more immersed in the world than I have been in a lot of other games. So I want her story to be fully fleshed out, and then I want to end with the final reveal, with the final boss, however that really works out. So, because obviously I don't know what the final anything is. There could be no boss fight. It could just be like, here's all the answers, although that's totally not how games work, but you never know. You never know. But whatever the final experience is, I want that to be my last experience with the game. Mm-hmm. So I've now spent two nights, and I've probably put 10 hours or so in at like post 1 a.m. which is for the last two nights, because I wanted to finish Horizon Zero Dawn before I jumped into Mass Effect. And then I realized there was just so much more to do still in Horizon that I was just like, man, I can't do it. So last night I was doing more exploring and trying to find, basically what happened was I found a side quest and then I finished it. It was longer than I thought it was going to be. And there was an achievement at the end. And then I went and looked at my achievement sheet, and there was like three major achievements for like the kind of really big side quests that are basically for like helping a tribe in their story. And then there was one space underneath of a hidden achievement. And I was like, is this the final? Because all the other story achievements are further up the achievement list. Sure. So I'm like, this looks to me like there's one more side quest that's like a major story arc that I probably shouldn't skip. So now I've been hunting around for that. And as a side to hunting around for that achievement, which I've been trying not to Google anything, so I'm not even 100% sure if that's what the hidden achievement is, but from the way it's organized, I think it is. So I've kind of been hunting around trying to find that. And over the course of that, I've like just discovered so much more about the game. So
that's good. It's good.
I'm still having so much fun in there, Ryan. Holy shit. Like,
I know. The last thing I did in that game was rappel off a giraffe thing. And that was amazing. Yeah. And I got to say, like, that game feels, like we said this before, it feels special. It's a great game. And games like this come across every once in a while. But it's this open world, you know, glut that we live in, where we have three games right now that are these massive worlds.
Yeah.
And but the lucky part is, and I will say this, the lucky part is that they're all distinct enough that you can drop. I think I checked it, you know, the Switch has this wonderful thing where it'll tell you when you bought a game for the first week, and then it'll switch over to telling you in 5-hour increments how much you've played it. Stupidest system I've ever seen, but I've put like over 50 hours into Breath of the Wild, but that hasn't stopped me from wanting to go to Horizon, wanting to play Mass Effect, because those are two very different worlds offering two very different experiences. You know, with Mass Effect, it's basically a dialogue simulator for me. That's what I was doing last night, is just literally like sitting there, it's like, and just listening to people talk. I find that awesome. And then in Horizon, it's more about the action, stealth mechanics of getting through an encounter as creatively as possible is what I've loved about it. Some people have loved that aspect of Zelda, but for Zelda, for me, it's been more about exploring, like picking a point on the map and saying, I'm going to go there because I haven't been there yet. And being able to climb every surface in that game has really ruined climbing in every other game for me. And I saw you were having a conversation on Twitter when you said you played a bunch of Horizon.
I've had a lot of conversations on various platforms in the last week or so.
I only saw the one. I did see you were saying you got a lot of flack for Zelda, and I hope you don't feel like any of that was for me, because honestly, I think that if someone, not necessarily you or anyone, doesn't like a game, and other people do, it's not the end of the world, and it doesn't make your game worse. It doesn't make your game better when someone has a differing opinion. If anything, it keeps things interesting. Something we've talked about on this show, we've been doing it for 5 years. What's the thing that keeps it the most interesting? It's like, we disagree all the time.
A lot.
and not in a way that we're at each other's throats. It's in a constructive disagreement conversation type thing. And then sometimes we come together, and those are also special episodes where we just geek out about a game. Like Quantum Break. We both loved it. The internet... they could take it or leave it. It was not special to them, but it was special to the show. And I think with Horizon and Zelda and Mass Effect, three really good examples of whether you love the games or hate the games, you're falling on a side that has people, like angry people on Reddit, talking about it.
There are a lot of very passionate people, and I think just because of their release date timing, Breath of the Wild and Horizon Zero Dawn, the two fan bases are really clashing right now, which is unfortunate, because I think they are, like, I feel Horizon is a superior game, but that doesn't mean that Zelda is a bad game. Yeah. And I think that you're right. There are definitely parts of Zelda that I wish were in Horizon. And although last night I was playing, and that was, like, one point that was made, you know, it would be really great if you could just climb anything, and I was like, yeah, but at the same time, I've also really enjoyed, it's basically a really good example is flying in World of Warcraft.
Sure.
Because a lot of people complain that you can't fly in World of Warcraft in the new expansions, and it takes a while to unlock, and you know, it's usually with a patch later on down the road. That's the way it's been with Legion and with Draenor, and a lot of people have complained about that. But the thing that I enjoy about World of Warcraft, and now enjoy about Horizon Zero Dawn as opposed to Zelda Breath of the Wild, is that I am forced to explore the world a little bit more. I'm forced to, like, find the paths, and sometimes they're obvious, but sometimes they're not. Versus in Breath of the Wild or in World of Warcraft, when I can fly, it's just a beeline. Like, it's, you know, as straight as I can possibly go, and I'm just going point A to point B and done. And there's no kind of route in between there. There's no, like, oh, I'm going to have to go around this, and, like, oh, what's that cave over there? And, you know, as much as people say it's amazing to explore in Zelda, and I think you can explore in this Zelda much, much more than any previous Zelda, it's still kind of almost limiting because it's so beeliney.
Yeah, there's only so much that you can hide in a crevice, you know, in Breath of the Wild, because it's, if you have such a large world and you can go anywhere, where do you determine where the shrines go and the Korok seeds go? Like, when I'm exploring little nooks and crannies, oftentimes I'll find, oh, cool, three Korok seeds. Really doesn't matter because I've already beaten the game. I don't really need to expand my inventory. But the shrines offer a very different experience. I'm able to get in there, find a puzzle, do something creative. It's awesome. But when you explore a nook, you don't know whether you're going to get just a bunch of Korok seeds or a shrine or both for that matter. But sometimes you discover characters that, or quests that pop up that you would never have seen if you hadn't, like, gone off the beaten path. And I think in Horizon, you find that as well. It's just more of a, I don't want to say guided, but directed. Like, when you look at that, cliff, it's like, either I can't climb it because it's a pretty invisible wall, or I can climb it and I can go right, left, you know, in a direction opposite of where the quest is telling me to go and find a cool area with a collectible. Or, like, I remember I was darting around and I found a cave and I went in, and just to the left there was just, like, this metal flower, which is one of the collectibles, I guess.
One of the collectibles, yeah.
And
which
I went
actually,
in.
it's the collectible that I've done the least of are the metal flowers, because all the other collectibles, they're really cool. There's like the ancient vessels, which are coffee cups, and so they all have different logos on them that help and tell the story.
What?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Sorry, spoilers.
No, it's not. I find stuff from the old world all the time.
Because I have all of the, like, I have all the collectibles except for the metal flowers. So, oh. But then there's also little, like, tribal figurines you can find. Are vantage points and the tribal figurines, each one that you find, he's like left a note for his son, so it's like filling in more and more of his story, which is really cool. And then there's the vantage points, which you basically go up really high, and then there's like a vision into the past almost. It's like a recording that you find at these vantage points, so you can see like what the world looked like before, as you kind of look around.
That's really
from those
neat.
Points. Yeah, so they're all really cool, and then you have metal flowers.
Yeah.
And they're just metal flowers.
It's just a collectible. I don't know, what are we gonna have them collect? We need a fourth. It's like, I don't know.
Make it's it kind of like... cool, because they're clearly tied to some sort of like agricultural practice or something. But I was just like, you know, like there isn't that extra little bit of Easter eggness to them that the other collectibles have. So that's the one thing I haven't collected a lot of in Horizon Zero Dawn. But one thing I did do in Horizon Zero Dawn, speaking of switching between games and switching between platforms, I got up to the top of something and then decided I should jump off before realizing I didn't have my paraglider anymore because it wasn't Zelda and I died.
Yep, I've done that. I did that a couple times. Actually, I think it was the first time I played Horizon. I'm like, I did this quest. All right, and roll off the hill and have to listen to the conversation again. And it happens. It happens to the best of us. Like, I got so used to the horse in Breath of the Wild that when I started to use the horse in Horizon, which I will admit before I say this, is a much more capable being, I still found myself being like, why isn't this working? You know, my horse isn't doing what I, you know, wanted to do, because I experienced it doing more things, therefore it should do everything, as opposed to Breath of the Wild, where it's like, this is a real horse. It's going to get upset if you try to run it off a cliff, so it's not going to go that way. You know, horses are very susceptible to ankle injuries, so, you know, they're not going to go over that little lip there. It's bad. That's realistic, Jocelyn.
Yeah.
It's also frustrating as hell. But
that could be like the tagline for Zelda. Like, realistic and frustrating as hell.
Yeah, like we were, I think last week the one that stuck with me, we were discussing the rainstorms, and it's just like, it's I saw an image on Twitter. It was, you know, something like Legend of Zelda, when rain happens, you just wait or something. And it's cornered me a few times as I've tried to explore, because once you've done all the main stuff, exploring is really just a lot of climbing. A lot of climbing and switching your gear to make sure that you're equipped for, say, the desert or the high mountains. And I'm just booting it up. I mean, Walking Dead has been pretty stale lately, so I just played. I was going to admit this on Zamp later, but I just pretty much played Breath of the Wild while, you know, Rosita and Sasha just, blah, 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 I don't know, they're going to shoot someone. The show is fine. It's just, it's not, like, I remember last year we were so into it.
Yeah, that you are to the point of playing something else while a new episode of Walking Dead is on. Like, if you told me that 4 years ago, I'd be like, no way.
It's, I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about it on Zombies Ate My Podcast when we get around to recording.
Yeah, I don't want to go too rabbit holy on this.
But I think that, it's just one of those shows that has, I've realized the formula, which is it's got four good episodes. The start, the two in the middle, and then the end.
Yeah.
I
would say this season is debatable.
Horizon.
This is not a Walking Dead show.
No. It's because it got delayed. I got to get it out there before I forget my point. Horizon, I think that, again, it's one of those games that I agree with you. What little I've played of it, that main character, having a main character with, I don't know, emotions and story and feelings and thoughts is really, is a really nice change of pace, because in Zelda, you know, Link has thoughts, but they're more, you know, dialogue options that feel more like you choosing as opposed to Link. Like, Link's kind of a blank slate. And with Aloy, it's, or Aloy, she's just this amazing character that is also a blank slate, because there are dialogue options that mm-hmm. affect the story and change how things work. And I really appreciate that. And Horizon should have been this game that was, for me, anyways, if Zelda had been delayed like we were all worrying, Horizon should have been this game like Mass Effect's coming out in a month. I got to get my dialogue wheel on and just talk to everybody.
What I really like about Horizon is that it gives you the option to just do a quest. Like, you can go talk to a quest giver and then basically choose the get me out of this conversation option, and she'll just say, okay, yep, I'll go follow this person through the garden and track them or whatever. She'll have some kind of dialogue option like that. Mm-hmm. Or you can actually explore and you can, you know, learn more about that person, learn more about the quest, learn more about the world. And you have all of those options to kind of get more information. And then every once in a while, you're right, you're confronted with a situation where you have the choice of how to react. And I believe that when you get those choices of how to react, depending on what you choose, that kind of shapes her attitude in the later conversations. So if you've chosen like the compassionate option each time, like the little heart, like then she'll just be a warmer kind of a character, as opposed to if you choose some of the other options. So it's interesting the way they've kind of tweaked it there. And I've really, really enjoyed Horizon. I know I've said that 100 times, but I find I'm learning more every time I turn the game on, and I really like that experience.
Yeah. No, I think that it's also one of those games that I look at and be like, I'm going to enjoy every moment of this. I almost wish there was some sort of, you know, announcement of DLC. Not necessarily right now, but in the near future, if that was part of their plans, I would like to see more story delivered in a proper way in a game like that. Because when these days, when you really enjoy a game, I, for one, and I know that everyone's opinion differs on DLC, I, for one, really enjoy being able to look forward to DLC, because Horizon's a huge game. And obviously they've invested into this engine, and the engine is being used by other developers like Kojima at Sony. But it's interesting when developers say, no, we're gonna do more in this world because we spent years building this engine and we want to, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing for them to get more out of it. So I would like to see more Horizon sooner rather than later. But if this is a game franchise that they turn around like they did with Killzone, we might get a sequel in 2 to 3 years, and it's selling well. Like, what they said, 2 million copies in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. That's a mm-hmm. good first start. And I think it was, they were saying,
well, especially like, for a franchise that is completely new, right? Because it's not like Mass Effect, it's not like Zelda, which I think is something else that makes it easier for me to like Horizon, if that makes sense, because I'm not looking at previous iterations and saying, oh, well, Majora's Mask was the best Zelda ever, so this is different in X, Y, and Z ways, so therefore I don't like it as much, versus Horizon, where it's like, there, I haven't played a Horizon game before. The story is really compelling. I'm enjoying the characters and the tribes and the world, and everything that I'm finding is just like, whoa, and new. Mm-hmm. So I feel like Mass Effect and Zelda, at least for me, kind of have the fact that they're like sequels or part of a franchise, are, it's almost like working against them. Yeah. So as much as I'm, you know, the idea of a sequel to Horizon, and I think it's probably actually why, looking back, why I like Quantum Break so much too, is just it was new and different and interesting and compelling. But if you like talk about the idea of like Horizon First Dawn or something.
Just Horizon. The next one is just called Horizon, which is super confusing.
Yeah. But if you're looking at the idea of a sequel, that's almost less exciting to me. I would rather almost see more story DLCs or something. I don't know. Like, a sequel could be cool, but at the same time, the standalone story of Zero Dawn is phenomenal. So I kind of would also be okay if they left it at that and then told me a totally different story with whatever resources they were going to throw into Horizon Zero Dawn 2.
I mean, if we were going to see DLC, I could expect seeing it at E3. And this is something that I appreciate when developers like focus on the main game, even if they're working on the DLC, like after it's gone gold, just you don't need to announce it for day one sales. I think season passes are awesome, but not when they're sold right away and there's no content. to enjoy. I mean, when you look at Breath of the Wild, when that was announced, a lot of people got upset because it's like, ooh, DLC, bad. For me, I was disappointed because it's like, well, I'm happy that they're confirming more Breath of the Wild, but I just, a season pass, and you don't have to buy it right away, but I just think it's kind of weird. Like, let the main game sort of exist on its own for a little bit and then start talking about DLC. I think BioWare was a company that has always done DLC at least right from a marketing standpoint, where they at least recently with Dragon Age and then with Mass Effect 3, minus the whole like pre-order thing, we won't talk about that, but I think that without a season pass and just saying like, yeah, of course we're going to support it after launch, and DLC will just be announced when DLC is announced, and when it's the last one, we'll say it's the last one. I don't think you need to have a season pass. Like, you're not even getting like a deal with that stuff, because most of the stuff they add into it to make it a deal is like, I don't know, here's a hoodie that's blue instead of the black one. This one gives you 50% bonus XP. It's like, well, what does it matter? I just beat the game. I'm just waiting for more story content. I don't need an XP boost.
Yeah.
I'm hoping there's something more there, coming from the person who hasn't even finished it yet or scratched the surface. But we probably won't see that until E3. But yeah.
I haven't looked at my time played on Zero Dawn, but it's got to be 50 or 60 hours at least.
Yeah. Is it a big game? Like, I know people are throwing around the 30-hour, and that was something I was surprised by Breath of the Wild, that you could easily finish it the way that I did in 30 hours, in the way I'm saying, by, you know, beating all the main quests. And it felt shorter than I thought it would. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but Horizon, I feel like someone said, Josh is now saying 64 hours, complete everything. So that's a pretty beefy game, Jocelyn. Mm-hmm. 64 hours is like, Ryan needs a coffee. He's going to stay up tonight. I'm glad you're still enjoying it.
There's a lot to it. And I think it basically, going through and doing all of the achievements is, you know, it's different. So Josh is saying 64 hours to complete everything. So to basically 100% the game, except for one achievement he didn't do. But yeah, so I would say I've probably put 50 or 60 hours in, and it depends obviously how much you use the fast travel system, which I haven't been, because the fast travel system isn't unlimited. You basically have to find resources to craft a basically supply pack. So you have to find like, I think it's like wood and then a couple of different types of meat, and you combine that into your fast travel pack, and then that lets you get from one campsite to another. And it doesn't require like more materials depending on how far you're going. You just either have a pack or you don't. And then that's your fast travel mechanic. And you can eventually buy an unlimited travel pack, but I haven't. Okay. And so I've been doing a lot of my Horizon Zero Dawning by walking, so I haven't been fast traveling, so that takes a lot of time.
Yeah, it's a big world,
you know. Yeah, so I mean, I think that depending on how much you use the fast travel system, your time in the game would vary, but I've been having a really, really great time in that world, and to the point that I chose to play Zero Dawn not only on Mass Effect launch day, but then again last night. So, which I guess technically was Mass Effect launch day, but like, so Monday night into Tuesday, and then Tuesday into Wednesday, I was playing Horizon Zero Dawn. I did get some hands-on with Mass Effect today, but Horizon Zero Dawn has definitely been, I guess, recaptured my attention. Like, I basically played Zelda because I felt I had to play Zelda because of the, first of all, because of the show, and second of all, because of the investment into the system. Mm-hmm. But kind of like, once I beat it, I was kind of like, okay, good, now I can go back to Horizon Zero Dawn, which I was really, really enjoying. So I think, like, it's just such a great game. It's such a great game. But I'm going to stop. And I'm going to talk about Mass Effect, which is really what I think a lot of people want to hear about, because Mass Effect Andromeda launched yesterday. I don't know about you, Ryan, but I didn't have any problems in terms of, like, crashing or, you know, like, day one freezes or stuff like that. Did you experience anything?
I did. It was I don't know what the fix is. It's like a DirectX crash, and it usually would happen after exiting conversations or opening and closing the map, and sometimes it would happen without without delay, like, well, the first night was every time I entered the character creator, in which I did something to my drivers. I did a clean and reinstall. It was fine. And then playing further, it was like every hour it would do it, and then it wouldn't do it for 5 hours. I'm like, okay, it cleared itself out. I don't know what it is. The game is coming in hot. It came in pretty hot. It's an error that is not just me. It's not a fault of the hardware. It has something to do with the software, and people are experiencing it all over. And it's not the worst thing, because I mean, it sucks you have to reboot the game and stuff, but it when it happens, it always seems to pop me back in where I was. So it's saving in some capacity. And, you know, I had some frustrating moments with it, and Josh is saying something in the chat room that that always crosses my mind whenever I play a console game. And I love the fact that with my consoles, I can just play the game and not have to worry. And if it's crashing, you know there's something that's going wrong, and and it's just a bad game, or your hardware is faulty. It's one or zero. With your PC, it could be software, it could be, you know, other hardware that's running.
Updates, yeah.
Exactly. And I'm not going to start the conversation of, like, which platform is better and why one is stronger than the other, but...
No, but I mean, it's also a good conversation to have, because I know I had the exact same experience. I didn't have crashes, but I had really weird, like, graphic artifacts, and I just realized... before the show that I had an update to my video driver. So that could be the issue too. But I spent a good chunk of my 2 to 3 hours in between the Angry Chicken stream this afternoon and the show right now is basically, I was like, I have this very small window to play. I wanted to get my hands on before the show so I could actually talk to you about it a little bit. And I spent a big chunk of that time troubleshooting, because some of the graphic issues were so freaking weird, and like to the point that it kind of like almost was hurting my eyes. But there was like weird stuff, like when one character in a like in not a full-on cutscene but in like a dialogue scene, I guess, the character, there was like one character in focus and then another character out of focus, and the out of focus character would be like all pixels. And I don't mean like my I hate anti-aliasing, like I'm a graphic snob, picky. I mean like big, like huge chunks of pixelated color, and I was like, I mean like huge, like fully visible, not like little itty bitty edge problems. And I was like, what the heck is going on? Like, I'm sure that this isn't the way it's supposed to look.
No.
So I was kind of, and then so I had to tweak some settings. And then, of course, every time you tweak a graphic setting, then it was giving me the message that I had to reload my game. So I was like, okay, fine. Tweaked a whole bunch of stuff, reloaded my game, which takes a very long time. And it's like all of this is eating away at my time to play the game. So I 100% agree that the upside to console is it is what it is. It looks how it does. And you just play the game. There's no tweaking to be done.
And the thing is, like, the game may look and run better on the PC, but I think that there are clear issues with the graphics that they're using on some of the humans. Most of the humans, they all kind of look plasticky to me. And I bumped the textures up to, I was playing on high and it was really apparent. Then I bumped it up to ultra and it gets a little bit better. But man, oh man, do the aliens look fantastic. I mean, if we want to talk about some of the stuff that looks great in this game, like a lot of the aliens, especially once you get going further on, look really good. And lip syncing is better. I don't know whether it's because I'm looking at something that doesn't exist as opposed to a human and you're getting that uncanny valley. But yeah, some people dig that min-maxing of settings and being like, oh man, if I just overclock my, I don't know why I'm putting a voice on. If I overclock my CPU a little bit, I'll be able to, you know, boost a little bit more and get that higher frame rate. People love that. And I appreciate people who do love that, because they provide details of like, here's my settings on this piece of hardware. Once I learned that I could just go to Google and be like, Mass Effect Andromeda, NeoGAF, GTX 970, and it loads up the performance post, which is a forum that's now 30 pages long, and it takes you right to the page where someone says, I have a 970, it's running at X frames per second, and here are my settings. And it's like, perfect, that's amazing, I don't have to do anything. And then there's the G4 experience that sets all your settings for you, and you can use that as well. So it's getting better. it's just, it's not that plug and play, let's do this, unless you have a brand new rig, in which my rig is old.
That's the other thing too, and a point Josh is making in the chat room right now, that it you know, you say it runs best on PC. Well, that depends on your PC, because I know Josh is saying he's playing on a 5-year-old PC. My computer is also 5 years old now, and when I bought my doghouse, it was made of, you know, spare parts they had laying around. So it wasn't even like cutting edge 5 years ago. It was maybe cutting edge 7 or 8 years ago. So it's very slow. And that was something that I was finding, is that every time I would turn to look, like there's the opening scene where you're kind of in a shuttle. I guess not the opening scene, but your first kind of mission. You're in the shuttle going down to the planet. And it's like you can look around, but as soon as I started to look around, it would freeze and the audio would keep going. So I was like, well, okay, won't do that. I'm just going to look out the window that's closest to me. And this is where they're probably going to point my attention anyways. So, but
yeah, it's,
it was, yeah. So it depends. It depends on the quality of your PC, I think, when you're saying which platform it plays best on. But if you have a state-of-the-art gaming PC, then yes, that's going to run the game the best.
Yeah, and my computer, like yours and Josh's, is about 5 years old, but I've replaced the video card. I actually looked at it the last time I replaced the video card was the last BioWare game came out, and I was talking to Ashley, and I said basically, like, I haven't bought a video card in a long while, and she's like, no, you're not buying a video card. It's like, yeah, no, I get it. I'm not buying a video card. Like, no, seriously, Ryan. But basically, yeah, what I was getting around to is
I've upgraded the graphics card too, but you know, it's still the processor, I think, more than anything else, right?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. I've gone down a rabbit hole of like, do I need to learn how to overclock my CPU because I have the people listening to the show I have an i5 2500K. It's very overclockable, but man, if I don't understand how to do that, and I know people say it's easy and there are guides, but I've tried it before and it has caused some issues. Not like hardware issues, but just like a lot of blue screens, and I'm just like, I don't want to do this. But they say, like, usually with a video game, your bottleneck is your video card. The CPU might be a bottleneck if it's lower, but I think the recommended spec for Mass Effect on PC is like 3.4 gigahertz.
See, mine's 2.7, I want to say.
That would cause like a little bit of slowdown, but I mean, yeah. A thing you could do is, and what I've done in the past before I had this computer, is I would basically Google, you know, like what settings are the bottleneck, because that's the other thing. I really appreciate when you look at the settings and it tells you what the setting is and tells you what it's impacting. So what I would often do is Google the setting and say basically what's a CPU intensive setting for Mass Effect Andromeda, and then turn that down. So it just impacts that. But yeah, I mean, obviously, like, I don't understand enough of it, or else if I understood more of it, I probably wouldn't have said that's why I like to play console games, because I think people who really get PC gaming and get really into the minimaxing of settings don't utter such words, you know.
Yes, very much so.
But and I think, yeah.
So, and I think the reason that we're kind of almost deep diving on setting up your settings is because there have been a lot of complaints around the internet and a lot of, you know, memes and videos and all kinds of crazy stuff shared about Mass Effect Andromeda, because man, that facial animation though, whew.
There are just these moments, and I mean, we should probably go over this first. What character I'm playing is Sarah Ryder, the default female appearance character, because I played the original trilogy as, you know, Shepard, male Shep, male, I forget what we're calling them, and I dug it, and you know, I just wanted something different in Mass Effect Andromeda. I'd always had people saying to me, like, oh man, Jennifer Hale, Femme Shep, she's amazing.
Oh yeah, Femme Shep was best Shep, dude.
Exactly, as I've heard. So that's why I went with Sarah Ryder, and she's getting a lot of flack, specifically, more so than Scott. But who did you chose Sarah? Did you customize it all? Who'd you pick?
I did choose Sarah, and I customized. Okay. And there's, okay, dude, there's no pink hair option. There is like yellow and orange and red and blue and green and purple and, you know, all kinds of variations in and of those things, except for pink. There's no pink. I was so sad.
The future has no pink. What is going on?
Apparently. I was very, very upset. But no, I'm just kidding. Not kidding about the fact there's no pink. Kidding about how upset I was. But I did the character creation because I wanted to obviously have a custom character, and I wanted to test it out for the show. And the character creation was pretty good. It was that really nice balance between like super crazy over the top 8,000 sliders to make a character creation and like pick one of four defaults. So it was kind of like, here's a whole bunch of defaults. I think there was like 10 for like default heads. And then you had like one or two sliders for each kind of facial feature. It was like up, down, left, right, or like bigger, smaller. And so it was like, you know, very, very, very basic character customization while still making it feel like you had a custom character.
Mm.
So that I like. But then I got into my first like character dialogue situation. And dude, I don't know if this happened for you, and maybe it's because I have a custom character, but it was like, I can't even contort my body into the way that my character was standing. But she was standing like she had a hunchback, so her shoulders were kind of like forward, and then her neck went out at like a 45 degree angle, and then her head was like back. I was like, I couldn't even contort myself into that position if I tried. It was really freaking weird.
That, yeah.
And I'm wondering if it's because it was a custom character.
I don't know. I personally, with facial animations, I've seen early on.
Well, it wasn't even the face as much. Although I will say, I find it kind of weird that when the humans talk, their mouth moves, but no other parts of their anything moves. Like, I don't know. I find them very. It's definitely not the best facial animation I've ever seen. But that wasn't quite as jarring as my crazy like. Next person.
Yeah, there are some moments where the animation doesn't quite line up, and that's the thing with custom characters and just being able to customize your characters in general. It creates a more complex system of having to animate those characters.
Yes.
And can cause some issues. But I think with my character, and as Josh is saying in the chat room, there are moments where your character will do something weird that looks like that no one should stand that way, no one should rest their shoulders that way. Walking seems fine in some instances, but then like Korra kind of walks like she's like a cowboy a little bit. and you've seen these animations if you've seen like the, you know, the internet handles re-release versions of Mass Effect, and it's not very flattering. It's a little funny, but it's also just not very flattering. But I don't know. The facial animations for me at the very beginning, there were some moments like where Sarah's waking up and she's got this like huge like grin on her face, but she's wincing. And I find that as you continue with that game,
I can't even do that face.
No,
it's huge grin, it's like, and wince at the same time.
Oh God, this hurts, but I'm so happy. I think with,
and some people are like that.
Again, yeah, and the point I'm trying to get to is basically, sorry, I think Sarah is like that, and I've played a little bit further into the game, and as you continue to, these are all new characters, we don't know anything about them, and we don't know their personalities yet. I think that's the difference between this and the original trilogy, is that we knew who Shepard was, we knew who Liara was, because we played three games of them. And with Sarah and Scott, you don't really get the sense of their personalities until maybe like 10 hours in, because they are kind of dropped into this world, this very scary unknown world. But then you quickly realize that Sarah is a bit of a jokester. She doesn't take things very seriously. When
is
she does
that because of the way that you're playing her, because
maybe.
I feel like maybe it's giving you different dialogue options already. Mm-hmm. Because I know that so the first dialogue box that you get, there's like a little kind of tooltip that pops up and shows you the four different ways that you can interact with stuff. And it's like professional, not emotional, that's the wrong word for it, but it's the one with the little heart. And then there's logical, which is like the little gear. Mm-hmm. And then I think there was like maybe a jokestery one as well.
So, okay, yeah, that could be it. Like, I usually play my characters a little more comically, like a little more humorous, like breaking the tension type thing. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, so then what I'm wondering, because I know in that first original dialogue you were given two options and it was like basically like joke around or be professional. And I think I chose the joke around option. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't get offered another professional option because it doesn't give you all four every time. And then I found that probably by my fifth or sixth option, I was getting like, maybe it's compassionate. Maybe that's what the little heart means. I can't remember. But anyways, basically like the compassionate answer, which I'd used a few times, and the logical answer, which I'd used way more often. And then I found that those were the things that I was getting offered, was compassionate and logical. And so I'm wondering if maybe I'm getting different dialogue options because of the things that I was kind of gravitating towards. So now I get the logical option every time because I pick it almost every time. And then, but it also gives me one of the three other options as well. So I wonder, because my character already is not very jokey at all.
Oh, see, that's just the way I play games. And I am seeing the options, the professional options. And I do have characters, like once you get more of your squad mates and you start to work with them and you start coming across new worlds and that's not a spoiler. There are multiple worlds. So when you go to these new worlds and you start to meet new characters and you interact with them, I feel like the sort of ha-ha jokester Sarah fits the way her mannerisms and the way she reacts to things and just, you know, her it the ma- the personality matches the appearance that BioWare has set up. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me anymore. I think when I first saw that animation, it was like, ooh, gosh, guys. But now that I'm playing more of it and being Sarah Ryder, it feels a little more like the right fit. I figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, just as you were speaking, I remembered last night I thought to tell you the reason why the kind of dialogue animations in Horizon Zero Dawn never bothered me, and I'm wondering if this is how I kind of fix it in Mass Effect, is I have subtitles turned on because I'm usually playing late at night, so I have the volume turned way down. Oh. So the subtitles are on, so I'm reading the subtitles, so I'm kind of peripherally seeing the animations, which is so it looked fine to me because I wasn't looking straight at their faces. But then last night I played with headphones and I was like, oh yeah, I can see how this you know, little side quest character is not that well animated, and I could see that how this would kind of be a little bit of a sticking point for Ryan when he was talking about that, because I had literally never noticed it because my eyes were always at the bottom, like lower third of the screen, reading all of the subtitles. So that I wonder if I turn on Mass Effect subtitles, if maybe I'll be just distracted enough that I won't notice that only their lips are moving.
It's not that bad. I mean, people are cherry picking, obviously. Like there are some issues out there. There's some footage floating around that's uncorroborated leaked footage that supposedly has better animations than what's launched. And I mean, I'm not.
Well, why would you do that?
Well, again, exactly. And I'm not here saying, you know, they're wrong or BioWare's wrong or whatever. That's just a random clip that fits together. And yeah, it kind of looks like the game, but looking better. But, you know, if you've played a BioWare game before and if you've played Dragon Age Inquisition, you kind of know what you're in for, because Dragon Age Inquisition had the same sort of weird just humans that were just sort of plastic dolls, and the lip syncing didn't line up, and some of the characters were very flat. But it's not a surprise that Mass Effect Andromeda is doing, and all the original Mass Effect trilogy suffered from this as well. There was a lot of like,
oh yeah, definitely,
you know, a dryness to the animation that didn't really, you know, come over very well. And I don't know, I've moved past that. I'm enjoying the game. It started to open up for me. I'm on my second world in the campaign, and to be honest, I won't delve further than that. But I think the way they've set up the story in a fashion that you are essentially a pioneer. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever played a game like this before and set up a story like that. And the mechanics that they're layering on top of that are just unique and different, but it's still Mass Effect. So I think that's what I really appreciate about it, is that I'm enjoying the setup of the story. The story hasn't gone quite far enough for me to determine whether I'm really enjoying the story, but the setup has been a lot of fun, and I like that setting right? Like this, we are trapped here and we need to make this work. Mm-hmm. But it was their idea to be trapped there, which is also kind of fascinating. yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm very interested in, and have been since they announced what the new Mass Effect was going to be. I do like the idea of being pioneers, of being explorers and trying to find a new Earth. I really enjoy that idea. And I think it's executed, at least so far, very, very well. That being said, I'm not very far at all. I'm still on the first planet, but I am really enjoying it. And it does feel quite Mass Effect-y. And I think it's been great. But you've had some time with the multiplayer, right? So
I did.
How does the multiplayer feel?
The multiplayer, I ran into issues with that as well. The first match played was slow motion. And I want to, as a public service announcement, when you play the multiplayer of Mass Effect and you have a mic connected, your mic is hot by default. You are talking and people can hear you. Some guy was streaming and he clearly wasn't talking to us. He was talking to someone else. Whether
like
he was
chat room.
Yeah, he was talking to the chat room. And he's like, oh man, the leg is so bad. The leg is so bad. And the leg was, I'll give him this, it was terrible because it was molasses, just so slow. And then the next match I played was a little bit better. And I'm like, clearly they're having some like pre-release issues. So I put it away and I went back to it. And it is functioning fine. It's super quick. It feels snappier than Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, like faster, because there's no snap to cover. So it feels looser than Mass Effect 3 multiplayer did. Like it felt like you snapped into that cover and then you were there until you decided to move away. Mm-hmm. But in Andromeda, because they have sticky cover, so when you go up to the cover, then you cover, and it's all dynamic, it just feels a little looser.
Smoother? Yeah.
Like I wouldn't say smoother. It's just a little looser. Like it doesn't feel smoother. Like you can walk up to it and you can go into cover, but you know, you hit the wrong button and you back away from the cover, then you're out of cover. And it's just like kind of like, you know, you're skating and it kind of, yeah, like you're skating. It's not a bad thing, but it just feels different. Like you go in expecting something and it's not that. So there's a bit of a learning curve there. Lots of characters. It's wave based. There are objectives like before. There's extraction. There's a cool app that you can get, which is the strikes. So you have two layers, and that's the way they've integrated the single player. It's called strikes, and basically you can complete multiplayer missions that reward you with XP credits and even loot crates with weapons and whatnot. You can complete those on your phone with your strike teams, or you can go in and complete a specific setup of a multiplayer, like say a bronze difficulty against outlaws on this map with these hazards. And when you complete that, you get some rewards, and that's the integration between the single player and the multiplayer. And it's basically a reward system. It's not tied, as far as I know, it's not tied to a percentage of completion for you to do better. But it acts as sort of a resource, you know. In Andromeda, everything's a resource, and it all goes to the bottom line and allows you to do more to progress the civilization that you've brought from the Milky Way over to Andromeda. And it just feels like everything you do makes a difference, even if it's just like, you know, numbers increasing. But it is a nice touch, and I'm glad they've put it in there. And I really do like the companion app stuff, where you can like do the stuff on your phone. That always gets me for some reason. I don't know why.
It's because you're always on the go, and you actually like aren't at your computer.
It's true. And when I can like set up like a couple of strike teams like on lunch, and then come home and be like, I have 30 like loot crates to open. This is amazing. It's a nice touch, and they didn't need to do it, but they do it anyways, and I like that integration. You know, Halo is one of those games that like segregates their multiplayer and single player, and I'm not quite fond of it. But then Call of Duty like tries to moosh it together in ways that are just so complex. And there's so many layers, but with this, they've really just kind of, you know, there's one overlap, and it's just so easy to understand, and it's rewarding as well. So. really appreciate
that. And it's not actually absolutely required the same way that it was in Mass Effect 3, right? Like, in Mass Effect 3, if you never played multiplayer, your resources were just constantly at 50%, and there was no way to get the quote-unquote good endings. It was just, like, you got the crappy ending, and that was it. Mm-hmm. So it's not integrated in that way this time, right?
No, there's no... As far as I can tell, there's no direct connection to completing the game and getting a better ending. It gives you a leg up in that it's giving you credits and resources, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's actually impacting your story it's not impacting your story, but it's impacting your progression in terms of being able to unlock weapons or build specific things, stuff like mm-hmm. that.
Fair enough. So I guess one final quick question about Mass Effect Andromeda. Mm-hmm. We touched on it a little bit earlier on. Have they made a canon Mass Effect 3 ending so far that you have seen? Because I think we can pretty obviously say that it wasn't the ending where you merge technology and biology, right?
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, I'm no scientist or astronaut or whatever, but they really set up the scale of, you know, this is the Milky Way, this is Andromeda. The idea behind the original trilogy is that the Reapers were a system set up within the Milky Way. They were only concerned with the Milky Way. When they say that there's this 600 journey through dark space, or 600 year journey, there's a reason it's 600 years, is because it's so separated. And when they drop hints about the old world, and these new characters are coming across and telling them, like, yeah, we came from Milky Way, the Milky Way. Oh, what's that? It's like, well, it's 600 years travel from here. It's very far, and you're not going home. But there's been little hints, like there's some dialogue in there that says basically, like, oh, we've been trying to contact our ancestors back home. No word back yet. And I'm glad they're dropping those hints, but they're not like, there's no mission, like, set up a beacon to try and call home. Mm-hmm. There hasn't been
any
of that.
Which would be kind of crazy, because if you're traveling at light speed for 600 years, mm-hmm. like, wouldn't it then take 600 years or more for any kind of signal to go back? So it's kind of makes sense that you wouldn't be able to contact home.
Well, yeah, and then they kind of try to explain, you know, in the Mass Effect lore, how they were able to look at these planets 600 light years away and determine that they were golden planets. Mm-hmm. And they kind of explain with weird logic that, oh, the science behind being able to look in a telescope and see what was going on that planet 600 light years away and have like an instant feedback of that is that moment is right now, not 600 years in the future. Mm-hmm. Is kind of interesting, and they pull in some races and some beings that aren't referenced elsewhere in the game, and that's kind of cool. That's the neat thing about this game, is the way they've set up these characters in this initiative is that they've inserted a layer of new characters a game and a half ago in the series, and it kind of feels like it fits, you know. It's an interesting way of doing it, that they've kind of slipped it into like kind of the middle of two, and there's references to things that happen or have happened in 2 and 1.
Okay.
But they don't like run out there and say like, this is what's happening, this is how we got here, this is how this all works. So I don't know if they're going to address that as the game goes on. I would like them to, but I'm sort of anticipating the end of this game basically being like, shit, we got word. And that's like, I think that's the end of the game. I don't think it's actually the end of the game. I just think that would be totally a way of being like, we needed a couple extra years.
Yeah, that would be very cliffhangery.
Yeah.
But I think basically the reason that I say it couldn't be the ending where we merged plants or basically biology and computers is because all of the characters from the Milky Way galaxy, which would have been the ones that were affected by the ending, none of us are like half human, half machine. We are 100% human DNA. There is no merging. So I think we can safely throw that ending out.
Well, right? that merge would have happened that merge would have happened after you left the Milky Way, because they kind of explain that their journey was they leave, you know,
oh, they Earth. Leave before the Reaper attack.
Exactly. It happens, I think, at the very beginning or partway through Mass Effect 2 that you leave. And they kind of explain that, you know, you jump to the edge of the Milky Way, or the edge as far as you can go with the mass relays. And then you just enter deep space. Everyone goes into cryo. But the you haven't got this far yet, so I'm not going to spoil it for anybody else or anyone for that matter. But there's some story coming your way that adds a wrinkle to all of this that is, I found, very interesting. And I always thought, like, how are they going to tell a story with this if, you know, just how are they going to tell an interesting story? Is it, how are they setting up, obviously, the calamity that has to happen to bring
tension? Yeah, there's got to be something.
Exactly. And
we can't just be No Man's Skying this.
Exactly. And what they've set up is very interesting. And I like the way they've set that up. And the quote unquote danger isn't, it may be, some may consider it stereotypical, but it's the type of danger that I was hoping for. You know, that mixture of danger was like, okay, perfect. This is what I wanted in my sci-fi epic. But they could have gone way more cliche.
That's interesting, because I really want to play more of the story now, because I want to be able to talk to you about this.
Yeah, you'll play it, and I mean it's just a thing that happens, and I don't know whether I can't guess at whether you'll enjoy it or not, but I think it's cool, and it was just interesting way of setting up these characters and this new world and the problems you're going to be facing, so. Yeah, keep playing, and I have a feeling that as we continue to get further into this game, there's going to be lots of stuff to talk about, because from what I've heard, the game becomes better and better as you play more of it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a sci-fi epic of, you know, 30-plus hours. I think it's safe to say that we can look at these types of games and say, like, yeah, it's going to be a slow burn, you know? And then eventually you'll get into a groove and you'll just really start enjoying it.
Fair enough. Now, we do have a topic of the week this week. Before we get to it, we wanted to thank our patrons. You can go to patreon.com/thegamersin and support the show. We really appreciate each and every one of you. And we are rewarding you by doing game night tomorrow night. So at 8 p.m. Eastern, you can go over to twitch.tv/JossPlays and you can join in with our Mass Effect Andromeda. If you have Mass Effect on the PC, we're sorry about all of you console players, but if you do have Mass Effect on the PC, you can join us for some multiplayer. It's going to be super duper fun, and even if you can't play with us, you can watch us. Again, that's at twitch.tv/JossPlays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Please do go and join in the Discord at bit.ly/TGI Discord in order to get your kind of name in. We're going to pull in the patrons as we start streaming, so make sure that you are there. We're really excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And that brings us to our topic of the week this week, which comes to us actually from he is Jim the Shovel in the chat room. And he has been a listener of the show for a very, very, very long time. And he's written in about something that I don't know if I ever thought that Jim would kind of, the direction that he would go with his gaming, but I found it really interesting, and especially very, you know, timely, given the fact that we just finished talking about three phenomenal single-player experiences. So basically the idea of being burnt out on competitive games. So Jim says, I haven't played a competitive PvP game in 2 weeks, by far the largest break since I started Hearthstone in January 2014. I'm enjoying this. In fact, it has me at the point where I'm considering quitting Smite completely. What? At least for now. He goes on to say that it has nothing to do with the game itself. I think of it as highly as ever, but it's a nice feeling being away from the semi-stressful nature of competitive games, not to mention how easy it is to get sucked up in them and lose most of your gaming time to a single game or two when there are so many different things out there to play. I have plenty of stuff I'd like to get to or play more of, and it's difficult for that to happen when I get so easily sucked into these endless pits of time consumption. So for now, I'm going to continue my break from it all, although at this point, Smite is the only one I still really play, and maybe it will end up more or less permanent. The amount of negativity and constant bitching in and around every single one of them is also ridiculous. It's such a shitty environment and not something that I enjoy having in my life. There's a reason you'll see me almost exclusively watching creative and variety streamers instead of those who constantly play a single PvP game. The chat's for and too often. Oh, the chat's for and too often the streamers themselves have pretty shitty attitudes about everything. I completely agree with everything in this message, Jim. I think that, like, you kind of captured a lot of what I've been feeling a lot lately too. Not so much necessarily with Warcraft, because it's not really a competitive environment, but it's definitely a big time sink. And I think a lot of these PvP games, they make you feel like you have to invest a lot of time in them in order to stay basically cutting edge. There's so many changes. There's, you know, new expansions in Hearthstone. There's new heroes in Heroes of the Storm. There's balance patches. There's new gods in Smite. There's, you know, new heroes in Overwatch to play. Like, there's all kinds of these constant balance patches and constant content patches that are coming out in them. Plus, because they're PvP, you feel like you need to stay up on all the changes so that you can compete. And that can be, first of all, very stressful. And second of all, you're putting these big time sinks into these games that you don't really get much more out of it day to day. Like, if you play a single player experience, you're going to be constantly seeing new things, learning new stuff, and, you know, gaining from that single player experience, where you're playing the same maps and the same experience over and over in a competitive setting. And they're two different, totally different types of gameplay. And I can see being totally burnt out on the competitive side of things.
Yeah. And I mean, to address the aspect of, like, getting, you know, like, in terms of a multiplayer game, something that is strictly same maps, everything, like you said, the reward you're getting is fun, right? Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. You're investing in that game. You're getting fun. Right?
Yeah, you're saying you're getting fun. That's assuming you're still having fun.
Yes, okay. So if you're still having fun, the reward is fun. And if it stops being fun, like, yeah, why are you playing? And so with single player, you're getting two rewards. You're getting fun and you're getting, you know, story. You're getting character development. And you don't get that in multiplayer. I think you do a bit in Overwatch, you know, when they add a new hero and you get that story development, but it's not the same.
No, as a single 2-minute game. A 2-minute short is not the same as a 30-hour story.
And again, there are exceptions to the rules, but the exceptions don't necessarily bring them on par with your favorite single player game. Like, if you look at Horizon Zero Dawn and the characters it offers, and then the Overwatch character they add every 3 months, there's a couple Twitter images, a YouTube video, and hey, there's a new hero here. I'm not trying to demean Overwatch, but like that's the comparison. That's literally what the two are. And I think, you know, on this show, I've been pretty vocal about just, I don't have time for multiplayer games. I will enjoy multiplayer games. I love to play Overwatch, and I loved playing Overwatch with friends when we were playing a lot more of it. Heroes of the Storm, same thing. World of Warcraft, same thing. But at the end of the day, I have limited time, and I want to maximize my reward when playing a video game. And fun isn't the only reward I'm looking for. It's story, it's character development, it's also unique experiences, something different. It's why I've enjoyed Zelda so much. It's why I've enjoyed Horizon so much. It's why I try to play games off the beaten path that aren't, you know, the Call of Duties every year or the Assassin's Creeds. It's just to experience something different, which is nice. And World of Warcraft, the only reason I play it every time an expansion comes out is because you're getting different experience, story, and fun. You're getting you're getting a really good mixed bag of awesomeness. And as the patches continue, you're getting less story, you're getting less new experiences, and I mean, usually the same amount of fun, but, you know, it's just, well, it's less and less.
Yeah, and I think that, again, you brought up the idea of the fun in the PvP games, and, you know, if you're not having fun, then, you know, why are you playing it? But at the same time, and Jim's actually in the chat room right now and is pointing this out again, basically saying, like, even if you're having fun, like, assuming Hearthstone. I love Hearthstone. Hearthstone is super fun to me. That doesn't mean I'm not stressed the F out every time I hit the play button on the ladder. And it's, you know, at first it's kind of this like fun, nervous energy, but I think over time, as your expectations get higher and higher and the competitiveness becomes more and more, then the stress becomes higher and higher. And then it's like, okay, you're taking away from the enjoyment potentially a little bit. And even then, even if you're still enjoying yourself, there's that level of stress in the background, and it can just be this kind of constant when you're playing a PvP game that you're always in this like heightened state of anxiety, and you don't get that when you're playing a single player game. So I can understand when you're kind of bombarded with a lot of different PvP experiences, finding the need, or like finding that you have the need to step away from that, because I know that's why I've been loving this past month. I play like a little bit of Hearthstone, but we're waiting for a new expansion, so I haven't felt the need to like go crazy grinding on the ladder. I haven't really played much like Heroes, Overwatch, like any of the other stuff. What I've been playing and sinking my teeth into are these amazing single player experiences, and it's been so nice and relaxing, and I find like I'm not stressed out when I'm gaming, and it's been so great. And I think now is a great time to take a break because we have so many great single player offerings right now. So mm-hmm. I completely understand the sentiment. And I think that there's probably a lot of people that are also in your same shoes, where it's like these experiences I used to really enjoy, these super competitive experiences, I'm finding like I don't enjoy them as much anymore, and making the choice to move away from some of that negativity. And that's even without looking at the shitty attitudes of people you might be playing with or streamers or whatever, like you can only shrug off so much.
Yeah. And another thing that comes across for me, and I don't know if it's a feeling that a lot of people get, but when it comes to time and the amount of time you have to play a game, I often find that the less time you have or the less time you set aside to play a game, it becomes less fun, even if you're experiencing the most out of that game in that, say, 20-minute period. Like, say, Heroes. Like, I haven't sat down to play Heroes in so long because I don't find I have a good chunk of time to sit down and really get into it, because it usually mm-hmm. takes 2 or 3 matches to get back into the game after being away for so long. And sometimes I'll be like, well, I only have an hour. I should play something that gives me fun right away, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to relearn how to play Heroes of the Storm, or relearn what decks I should make in Hearthstone, or
well, it also just gives you the ability to walk away from, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you can sit there and say it takes you 2 or 3 games to get into it, and then it's like, okay, I've invested an hour to get back into this game. Now I'm into it. I'm still feeling a little bit of this anxiety, but you know, whatever. I'm going to keep going. Then you usually get into this like, oh, just one more game, oh, just one more game, oh, just one more game, because of just almost the addictive nature of competitiveness. Mm-hmm. And with a single player game, it's a more relaxed experience, and you actually have the option of saying, okay, I'm going to play from 9 p.m. till 10 p.m. and then I'm going to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And you can just stop. Or you can also say, oh man, which is actually what happened to me last night at like 5 o'clock in the morning, but still happened to me last night. I got to the point where I had an icon on the map. I was like, I'm almost standing on top of this. I'm pretty sure like I can see like a platform above me. I know that's where I'm supposed to go to find the thing that I'm looking for, but I can't freaking find the path. And I got super frustrated. And then I was like, you know what? Okay, I'm just going to save and walk away, and I don't need to worry about that. And I'll just come back to it, and it'll be in exactly the same state. And you can't really do that in a competitive game, even if you get to the point where you say, okay, this is my last match of the night, I'm going to go to bed. The state of the game isn't going to be the same next time you come back to it. You're not going to be competing against the same people. You're not going to be, you know, like with Hearthstone especially, like the meta changes hour to hour based on, you know, like who's currently logged into the servers. And I know that that's probably similar with Heroes of the Storm. Like the competition that you face at 6 o'clock at night is not going to be the same as, you know, midnight or like 10 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, even just the changing of the ladder meta in some of these competitive games can make it so that you can't just, you know, walk away and pick it up again later on. So then that leads to, oh, well, my Pirate Warrior deck is working really well right now. I got to keep going. I can't walk away and play tomorrow. So yeah. I think it's, they are definitely two totally different ways of playing, and I can see how someone would be getting burnt out on the competitive way of playing. Some people will love it forever, but it's not for everybody, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking a break.
No, and the thing for me, the way I've always approached multiplayer games is I some of my favorite memories of playing video games involve multiplayer experiences of a competitive nature as well, like Halo, Smash Brothers, Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch,
Into Mario Blizzard, Kart.
Mario Kart, you know, and I think it's, for me, it's more about the people I'm surrounding myself with. Like, Heroes of the Storm, I'd pop in, like, oh, who's online? You know, play some games with Bo and his crew and just have a good time. Oh, let's switch over to Overwatch. And it's, for me, it's more about the people I'm playing with as opposed to the games. I'm not a solo queuer. I think Smite, when Game Night sort of shifted out of our normal play period, but when Game Night was in its heyday, like once a week, we were playing Smite a lot. It was our go-to, and that was some of the most fun I've had playing Smite. And then as we stopped playing Smite and more games came out, it felt like the first year of Game Night was like, what game should we play? Well, the only game that's out is Smite. And then there were so many more options that we could play. I just stopped playing Smite. And I'd be like, man, I really miss playing Smite. It's like, what are you talking about, Ryan? We play every week. Like, I'm in there all the time. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't, sure. Like, I'm not a solo queuer, and I only play when my friends are playing. And that's why Mass Effect was so important. Like, I have to get it on the platform that Jocelyn's going to get it on, and that, you know, so we can do game night proper. Yeah. So I look forward to multiplayer experiences, but I don't seek them out usually. I usually wait.
Well, and I would say too, like, the multiplayer experiences that you tend to gravitate towards, like, you know, we played even in Smite, we play Assault, technically PvP, but there's nothing riding on it. It's, you know, like, I guess your background rating may go up or down, but, you know, it's random, it's fun, it's one lane, it's not, you know, the competitive Smite ladder. And you only play with friends. And I think that there's almost even a difference there between, like, and you also love, obviously, Mass Effect multiplayer, which is a totally cooperative experience. Yes. So I feel like you lose a bit of that stress when you're not dealing with a ladder, when you're not dealing with solo queuing and team composition and all those kind of things that put more stress on a player. So I think that, yeah, there's a little bit of difference between the kind of multiplayers that you you gravitate towards personally versus, you know, what Jim is talking about here, which is like a competitive PvP situation. Like, I would say that, yes, you're in a PvP situation, but without that competitive, like,
yeah,
branding.
I'm a team player. Like, when I play Halo, like, I was playing with a friend of mine, and he's like, oh, yeah, free for all, it's the best. It's like, no, it's not. No, it's not, because everyone comes for me and I die right away. Yeah, you know, they see the guy limping, like, get him, he sucks. You know, that's why Mass Effect, it's like, I've been waiting literally 5 years for this game because there hasn't really been a similar thing like that out there, like a game with that mode. So yeah, I'm more of a cooperative player, and when they don't have a cooperative mode, I'm just like, yeah, I'll play a few matches. That's about it. So,
fair enough. So, Jim, thank you so much for writing into us. I think it's a really good topic, especially right now. And I think that if you are going to take a break, now is the time to do it. Speaking of breaks, Ryan, do you want to take our patron ad this week?
Yes, Simon's back again with Weekly News Desk, which is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. You can find their stuff over on iTunes or at weeklynews.com.
And you can find more about us if you visit us on the web at gamersandpodcast.com. You can also find us on A-Move TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and For Azeroth. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/amovetv. And if you'd like to email the show and let us know what your first thoughts on Mass Effect Andromeda are, that was harder to say than I thought it was going to be, please do email the show at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.